Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Callum Borchers. Remember this song?
What you say, that you only meant well, cause you did.
That's Hide and Seek by Grammy Award-winning artist, producer, and engineer Imogen Heap. Heap's music has left an indelible stamp on popular culture and on a generation of artists like Jason Derulo. Now, what about this one? That's Four Non-Blondes' What's Up and lead singer Linda Perry. Perry is an artist, producer, engineer, and a member of the Songwriter Hall of Fame. She's a Massachusetts native with a career working with artists like Christina Aguilera, Alicia Keys, and Pink. And this year, Perry was the first woman in more than a decade to be nominated for Producer of the Year, Non-Classical, at the Grammys. Perry and Heap are both working to change how the music industry treats artists, and they've got two different and bold ideas. Both women are in Boston today to speak at Berklee College of Music, but first they stopped by for a conversation in our studio, and Heap began by reflecting on what she sees as the biggest problems in the industry.
Well, essentially, we have an industry which is very fragmented, and each part of that industry is very interested in itself. It's interested in the data that it has. It's interested in holding power. And along the kind of the play-to-pay situation between the music maker and the, you know, that which has played it, or whether it's radio, whether it's a streaming service, whether it's a live performance, the long process that it takes to reach the payment of that music maker is sometimes 2 years. And there's lots of people along the way who take, you know, a chunk out of that. And as that happens, data gets lost through that process. So the biggest problem, perhaps, is just trying to massage the music industry to a place where we see ourselves as a holistic organism rather than separate entities, trying to reach higher profits. And so we are now, you'll see so many music makers starting to develop their own services, their own apps, coming into the music industry as a kind of force from the ground force of those at the coalface, developing projects, developing services that they know make sense. And that's, we're seeing a big shift there.
I want to dive into those music business models in a little bit. But Linda, I also want to ask you about the music itself, because you recently told WBUR's Ariel Gray that you think there are a lot of hits being made right now, but not enough art being made. What do you mean by that, and what's causing it?
Well, I feel that what's happening is the art of music is getting lost, the art of recording, you know, the art of songwriting. It's coming from someone, you know, that sits at a piano or picks up a guitar. Like, I actually sit and, you know, I guess I would be considered old-fashioned. How dare I? Wow, you're so old-fashioned writing a song like that. But I do believe in that style of writing songs, man. I mean, I believe that it comes from your heart, and you sit and you express a story. And I believe it's that story that's being missed, and that's why, honestly, for me, I feel the music industry is, you know, collapsing, is because the experience that we give to the listener is being taken away by this very, you know, cut and paste, just want to get on the radio kind of mentality. That is where, you know, Imogen and my story come together and meet.
To your point about being maybe old-fashioned, though, in the way you conceive the song, I don't know if it's old-fashioned, but what about sort of just being kind of, I don't know, a highbrow? I mean, if it's popular and it's a hit, you know, isn't there sort of an inherent art in making something that's just popular for mass consumption?
Go ahead.
I think it's a bit like a fear of, oh, if I don't keep up, if I don't keep up, if I don't make something popular, then I'm going to fail and then I'm going to be penniless. And it's so hard to get into that position of actually having any success, that when you get there, it doesn't leave you with this support. There really is this kind of this sense of, oh, it could topple at any moment. And that's not a good way to kind of wake up in the morning and feel relaxed about, you know, wanting to drift into finding something core and emotional that you want to express.
Sure.
And also, fear is a terrible place to operate anything, you know, based on fear, because I'm not saying I'm highbrow at all. Trust me. I mean, I believe in, like we were talking about Grimes, I think she does incredible art, you know, with her knowledge and her technology and her creative. We're talking about kind of the mainstream, you know, place where people are operating from. And it's operating from, let me, what did they do? I want to copy that, you know, and labels putting out a song every week. We have to ask ourselves, who are going to be our legacy artists? Who are going to be our Aretha Franklins? Is it going to be Justin Bieber? Is that going to be our Marvin Gaye? Because if that is, I'm not saying anything about him at all, but I'm saying that's just not good enough. We have to raise the bar. Zeppelin and Smokey Robinson and Carole King and Janis Joplin, still in 2019, why are kids still listening to that music? Because they hear a difference. Some of them think Zeppelin's a new friggin' band. You know, I remember hearing a kid going, this song, Hotel California, that is a great song. Is that a new band? Why are kids doing that?
Well, so they're still listening, and they're still, they're sampling, and they're riffing on it.
Exactly.
So new music.
That's all I'm trying to talk about. Yeah. That is quality stuff.
Well, and Imogen,
I'm just trying to figure out who is the quality right now.
Who's the quality? And Imogen, you've seen a lot of artists do this with your work as well, right? To riff on it, sample it, and whatnot. And I wanted to ask you about one sort of really high-profile episode involving Ariana Grande, who has talked glowingly about the influence of your work on hers. And you talked to Vulture last year about when you were miscredited on one of her songs. This was her cover of Good Night and Go on her album Sweetener. Let's just take a listen to both songs, yours and then hers.
Okay.
Why'd you have to be so cute? It's impossible to ignore you. What must you make me laugh so much? Is that enough? We get along so well. Just say goodnight and go.
So I understand that she had permission to use Goodnight and Go, right? She'd spoken with you about this before, but then you weren't credited on Spotify or in the album artwork for the cover of that version. So how does that happen? And is that part of what you're trying to address with your Creative Passport project?
Yeah. I mean, essentially, Ariana, she's a huge fan. She's been a huge fan for years and, you know, have this really sweet relationship. And I was so excited when she sent me the cover of, well, it's not a, it is a cover, but it's also, she's got a new verse and it's very, very different. So, yeah, I was shocked. I was like, wow, that's, how could that happen? You know, loads of my fans were angry at Ariana for not crediting me. And I was like, God, if Ariana knew that, never in a million years would she have let that go. But she's extremely busy. She's got, you know, a major label dealing with that stuff for her. And it should be taken care of and it should be done properly. But for whatever reason, it wasn't. And there weren't the right people overseeing it. And the problem is that in order to kind of make that right, I had to call up my ex-manager, who then had to call up their manager, who then had to call up the label, who then had to do the stuff and da-da-da. And it took maybe 2 weeks of time to get that changed on Spotify. It couldn't be changed on the main artwork. And it's an insane amount of waste of time and money. So the idea of the Creative Passport is really, it's to create a verified identity space, a digital identity space at its kind of core level for music makers, so that we can be verified to suggest a change, to augment some metadata around a track independently ourselves on our own merits without having to go permission, da-da-da-da-da thing happening. We could do that in, you know, 5 seconds.
So what you're describing here is this big sort of music database powered by blockchain technology, which is the same underlying technology for Bitcoin. I usually think about it in sort of the banking industry, right, that you can have super fast, super secure transactions. How do you do it? How do you pull it off, though, for music? I mean, do you need to get individual buy-in from Spotify and all these? Does everybody have to be participating?
Yeah, so it's been evolving ever since I kind of went, oh, blockchain, amazing thing. Let's think about what that can do for the music industry. And essentially, it can't do anything on its own. It needs the right applications. It needs the right people to buy into it, as you say. And over the years, it's kind of boiled down to actually the Creative Passport being very small. It's a very tiny, thin bit of data, but it's a very essential piece of data. It's the bit that points everyone to this one point of view. So when you go onto Spotify and you're looking up the credits, and if you're lucky enough to be credited up there, you know, if you are lucky enough to be there, you could imagine the next point not just being Imogen Heap, you know, end of story on Spotify, you know, just a no link. You could click on further to that and discover Imogen Heap endpoint in the world, like the digital version of me. How can we empower our digital selves to be working on our behalf 24/7, interfacing with machines and humans? When they need the data, we can give it to them. But we can't do that as an individual. We just don't have the time or the money or the team. So we need to live in that digital space. So that's essentially what this is. We're not a threat to anyone. We're actually going to help alleviate a lot of the friction. We're going to help the flow much better. We're going to help labels, we're going to help collection societies with their missing data sets, and be able to be more than the sum of our parts. Because at the moment we are just parts, and the only tissue that connects everything are the songs and the musicians, and we need to empower that connection.
We're talking about the music industry with Grammy winner Imogen Heap and Grammy nominated producer Linda Perry. And Linda, I want to ask you about your We Are Here, H-E-A-R, label, which sort of has some overlap with the artist empowerment mission that Imogen is describing.
Yes.
How are you going about that?
Well, again, we are such the polar opposites. I'm more in the old school mentality of developing and finding, you know, the one piece that Imogen is talking about, and that's the artist. In the 90s, when I was an artist and with Four Non Blondes, I remember as being in rehearsal rooms and oh, my amp blew up, and I would go down and there would be, you know, Primus or Helmet or, you know, Green Day, and we'd, you know, share instruments, we'd get up on stage, we'd communicate together and collaborate and be creative and fun. And you don't see that at all anymore. Like, that's what I'm talking about. It's like you're just seeing labels finding something that kind of fits what's happening right now, and they throw it out there. So what we're doing is we're trying to build a community, and we have a vinyl pressing plant, you know, where you can get up on stage and play right to vinyl. We have a store to sell that vinyl for kids to come and meet other kids. We have songwriter showcases. So We Are Here is basically a very old school mentality with a very new school way of distributing music. And we're just left field. Like we're not waiting for license, you know, for ad agencies to come to us. We go to them, bring our artists to them, play, and we've been getting licenses from that. I get on the phone and I call radio stations. Now, mind you, the same radio stations that aren't paying our artists, and, you know, I still do believe in radio, but I call them myself and they're like, what? You know, why are you calling Linda Perry? And I'm like, it's my artist. Of course I'm going to call, you know, so it's really developing relationships that can help create a personality behind the music.
Interesting. The two of you will be on a panel at Berkeley this afternoon, and you'll be talking about, at least in part, a new report from Berkeley that struck me as really interesting. They took a survey and found that 78% of women in the music industry report that they have been treated differently because of their gender. Nearly half of the respondents said that they should be farther along in their careers. What's your takeaway from that?
It's a very different landscape than when it was. It was a very studio-based environment where it was men only. You know, when I went and made records from the age of like 17 in recording studios, I never saw women, ever. Not even a tea girl. You know, it was just not a thing. There was one engineer I work with called Avril McIntosh. She's amazing. But that's the only person. I did come across times where I was put in, you know, very awkward situations, and I had to deal with them in ways that were very uncomfortable. And to be honest, it was so the way that it was done, and maybe it still is, that I didn't even realise that it was happening. I didn't even realise that wasn't, you know, should be different, could be different. But I didn't actually realise until I was in a place called Portcullis House in London, which is where you meet MPs and you discuss these things. And my friend Vanessa Reed, she's the head of the PRS Foundation. And she pulled loads of women together and she said, Imogen, I want you to come and talk about women in the music industry and what it's like and how hard it's been. And I'm like, do you know what? I haven't found it hard. And then I was in that meeting and all of these women were talking about experiences that they'd had. And I started to cry. I was like, that was me, that was me, that was me. But I just wasn't aware of it. It was so prevalent, it was so everywhere. So I think, you know, the really important thing is it comes back to community. And with social media, we are seeing that kind of more openness. But what we don't have still is that kind of private conversation space in a controlled space where we don't have to blurt out everything in public, but we can interface with each other in the digital space. We need to reach out to each other, to support each other, to knowledge share, to signpost good and bad actors and become this kind of, you know, policing our own space in a way that is useful to us to move into the future.
I'm angry at the fact that women have to go like 10, 15 more miles than men do. And also the thing is, too, is that the information hasn't been out there. Like when you're saying long time ago, it's not sexy. When you think about a producer, engineer, honestly, most people, kids are thinking, oh, they're old and it's uncool. So that's why I started this We Are Now. And, you know, I had Dolly Parton, Sheryl Crow and Grimes and myself in a studio talking about our favorite, you know, drum techniques or why Dolly doesn't care to have credit for production, but she does all the production, you know, and how Grimes does everything in the box. So it really is showing the fans that are, you know, Grimes, the younger generation, oh, that's cool. So basically, that's what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to show that there are other avenues besides just being the girl on stage dancing around, that you can be empowered, you can still be creative, and it's sexy in a different way. And then I'm not talking about sexy, I'm talking about swagger sexy. I'm, you know, just an other environment you can plop yourself into, and it could be very, very creative.
Interesting. And Imogen, I know that in just about a week on April 19th, we're going to have some new music from you, which we haven't heard yet, but you're releasing it on Linda's label, We Are Here. What can you tell us about what we can expect?
So I was in a band once upon a time called Frou Frou, and we released a record called Details, but we never really had the chance to tour it because the label didn't support us when we wanted them to. They supported the more famous band. And so we now get the chance to tour together. We're touring now. We're going to be here in Boston. I'm also doing Boston Calling. But one song that we've written that we really, really love is called Guitar Song, and we're releasing it with We Are Here, and we're very excited. So that's going to be the kind of...
It's stunning. It's a beautiful song.
The A side, in inverted commas. And then on the other side is this song called The Quiet, which is a track that I initially wrote for a game. But it's a very sweet song. It's very orchestral. And hopefully, you know, some people will hear it and like it. And I'm very happy with the song.
That's Imogen Heap, a Grammy Award-winning artist, producer, and engineer, and she's in Boston for a 3-day artist-in-residency at the Berklee College of Music. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
And Linda Perry, Grammy-nominated producer, artist, engineer, and member of the Songwriter Hall of Fame. Linda, thanks for your time today.
Absolutely. Thank you.